I'd like to welcome everybody to the B'nai Yeshurim Beis Medrash Summer Learning Program. I have a few announcements. First, that the shiur is sponsored by Debbie Sondheim in memory of her father, Heinz Sondheim, whose first shiur site will be on Matzah Yom Kippur in honor of her mother. Ina Sondheim, and also Lizecha Nishmas, Menachem Yitzchak, Ben Yaakov Yisrael, Rachel Leah, Bas Chaim, Asha Cohen, and Chaim Abba Ben Yosef Abraham. You know, Ellie will be very upset with me, but I just have to give a few words of introduction, even though he doesn't need it here. You know, everything has its way of working itself out, and everything, you know, is, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has everything predetermined. But when Ellie left Teaneck, for me personally, it was an unbelievable void. But that void has been filled by visits and phone calls. But for the greater community, and what I experienced in the past few weeks is his being a special Talmud of Rav Aaron. And every time we lose the Gadol, there's a vacuum, there's an emptiness, a void of becoming like a Yosam. And even if you weren't a Talmud of Rav Aaron, and even if you didn't hear his Torah all the time, everyone in our community has been influenced by his life. So the void of missing Eli as a friend, as a person to learn with and learn from, was always filled with Divrei Torah, but never expected that he'd be able to step up to the plate and really be able to transmit as a real special Talmud and friend of Rav Aaron to really give over his Torah to the next generation. So everything has a certain hashgacha, and it's an unbelievable schus for us to be able to learn from Rav Aaron through Eli.
All right, anybody who knows my relationship with Henry will know that not only do I feel free to disagree with him, I enjoy it. Okay, the idea is not to give a hesped or memorial words for Lichtenstein. The idea was to pick three topics, three substantive topics that are Lichtenstein addressed over and over again, and present those topics as a way of looking at how Lichtenstein viewed the world, and in particular, how he viewed our world. So just a two-minute bio, just so we could start. I also ought to say the following. Every time I say Rav Lichtenstein, I mean Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal. Every time I say Rav Aaron, I mean Rav Aaron Zatzal. He was known affectionately and respectfully as Rav Aaron by his Talmidim, so I think that's the phrase I'll probably land up using. Okay, Rav Aaron was born in France in 1933. His family escaped the Nazis, and he made it to the United States at the age of 8, Chicago, Baltimore, eventually New York. He was a child prodigy at Chaim Berlin, and at the ripe old age of 16, already with this great reputation, he showed up at YU. He was in YU through getting his degree there and smicha. 1953 to 1957, he spent in Harvard getting a master's and a doctorate while also learning with the Rav. In 1960, YU reconstituted its kollel, and Rav Aaron became, I guess, the first Rosh Kollel. And 10 years later, more or less, 1971, he made Aliyah. People think he made Aliyah to this big yeshiva called Yeshivat Har Etzion. He made Aliyah to like a little hut in Alon Shvut, where there was a dream of a yeshiva called Yeshivat Har Etzion. And much of the yeshiva's growth obviously has to do with Rav Lichtenstein. One last point of introduction. I am by no means an objective observer. I'm a Talmud. I view myself as a Talmud. I think it was a great schus to be a Talmud. And so I'm not kind of coming to this topic and addressing it from the outside. I'm addressing it from the inside. That said, I will promise to do my very best to be objective and to present it as I think Rav Lichtenstein would have wanted it presented and not just as I see it. Okay. The topic tonight is From versus Good, reflections on the role of morality in Rav Aaron's thought. And I suppose to have any conversation about from versus good, we need to define terms. So, what does frum mean? That should be pretty easy. And by the way, we mean it in a good way. It's not like a pejorative, God forbid. Frum means frum. What does it mean? Anybody? Okay, that's as good as anything. A person with Yirat Shamayim is a frum person. What's a good person?
Honest.
An honest person, a moral person, an ethical person. Now, in a perfect world, they'd be the same. And there's no reason why they're not the same, except that our experience in the world is that if everybody takes 10 seconds to think, they can think of a person who they think is good, a person who they think is moral, a person who they think is ethical, but isn't necessarily frum. All of us have worked with people who we think of as being lovely, kind, good people, but are mechalel Shabbos. And sadly, we could probably do the reverse also. All of us can probably think of somebody who's makbid in chumros and in Torah mitzvahs, but who probably is not our role model for how we would behave in life. That's the sad fact, that although these terms should be pretty similar, they're not. Okay, but what about philosophically? What about thought-wise? Should they be the same? I know that when we think about it, they're not. But if we were starting from scratch, would we want to put together a world where good and frum were synonyms? Or does there need to be a difference between them? That's what I want to talk about. Okay? How much we want to make those two words synonyms? And if we can't, how close we want to get them to be one to the other? So, let's start back at the beginning. A definition of frum. Rav Lichtenstein thought that the pasuk in the first source was as good a place as any to start. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Va'ata Yisrael, it's not this week, I guess it's next week. I guess Akev. Va'ata Yisrael, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Meimach. What does God ask of us? Ki im li'irat Hashem Elokecha, to fear Him, la'lechet b'chol drachav, to follow His ways, uli ahavoto, to love Him, v'la'avodas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levav v'chol v'chol nafshecha. What's the pasuk say? So somebody has suggested Yirat Shamayim before. It's not far. Okay, we're supposed to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're supposed to fear Him, we're supposed to imitate Him. This includes a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning the relationship you would want to have with another person, and obedience. Right? You want to love, you want to fear, and you want to do whatever He tells you to do. That's a pretty nutshell description of what it means to be frum. To have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to be obedient with Him. But it's not enough. Look at the next pasuk. It's really the last pasuk in Koheles, more or less. Sof davar kol nishma es ha'elokim yirah, ve'es mitzvot sof shimor kizeh kol ha'adam. More or less the same thing. Again, have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, fear Him, and be obedient. Okay. So much for defining terms. Now, let's get to the good and the frum question and ask it as follows. Rav Lichtenstein used to quote, I guess Socrates was pretty famous. He knew a lot of these guys. He asked the basic fundamental question. Is something good, I'll say it in frumer terms, is something good because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands it or because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wills it? Or is it the case that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands that which was already good? Everybody clear? It's a very simple question. The simple question is, look in the pasuk, for example. Right? The ways of the Torah are sweet, and all of its pathways are peaceful. They're sweet and peaceful because they're sweet and peaceful, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to follow that path. Or they're sweet and peaceful because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do it, and therefore, by definition, they are sweet and peaceful. Examples. Kibud av va'em seems like the kind of thing that is observed or seen as a value in almost all cultures and almost all civilizations. Could it really be the case that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, don't honor your parents, you know, it's just going to make them bad people or something, that Kibud Av V'Aim is bad. Would it have been bad? Could it have been bad? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, don't give tzedakah, right? Tzedakah just basically perpetuates the underclass. It keeps people on unemployment. Don't give tzedakah. Would tzedakah then have been immoral? Unethical? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to murder. Okay, I could go on and on. What do we think? Yeah.
But then you go
back.
Huh? Abraham
had that question. The Akedah.
No, not the Akedah.
Okay.
Abraham speaks to...
Okay, we're getting there. But forget Pesukim. I'm just asking, what do we think? As religious people, what do we think? What comes first? Say the truth.
That we think that these things are good. That there is a goodness separate.
I'm happy to admit, for me, I would like to believe that that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, separate and apart from the obedience, I would like to believe that that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands me is good. Yeah.
Good and moral.
When I say good, I mean moral.
No, but you think they're really separate because society changes and morality changes. Good is a truth that we don't define to, we have to separate.
Well, it's what gets us in trouble. Okay, maybe we'll come to that. Just a pasuk that Rav Aaron liked to quote that's interesting about this. The pasuk in Tehillim that says, it's right below 3, Kol Hashem Bakoach, Kol Hashem Behadar. He often talked about, Kol Hashem Bakoach sounds like, okay, God is strong and God forces us to listen to Him. Koach is kind of an independent quality, but Hadar, splendor, sounds much like beauty, like something the way we would see things, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fits into some kind of system that has some kind of moral beauty or a beauty of truth, as he put it. There are many, many psukim that could help us push in either direction, but maybe we ought to start where Debbie wanted us to start. And that's with an interplay between Avraham Avinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu that people quoted it for many years. Rav Lichtenstein quotes it in all of his essays on this topic. Yes?
Just want to say, Ellie.
Sorry, your name is?
Sorry,
Mom. But not everything could have been Tov.
But it is.
Yeah. Okay, I think it's much more complicated than that. But
yes, it is.
Okay. Well, yeah, Jack.
Does Zal know the differentiation? They say that the mitzvah is cooking and mishpatim, and they say that the mitzvah...
Yeah, we'll get there. Okay, first things first. This, I think, is the fundamental source. Lichtenstein quoted it all the time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Avraham Avinu, and he tells him, I'm going to destroy stone. They're evil people. I'm going to destroy stone. And now look at number 3. Vayigash Avraham vayomar ha'af tispet tzadikim rasha. Could it be, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you're going to destroy tzadikim and rishayim together? Ula yesh chamishim tzadikim b'soch ha'ir ha'af tispet v'lo tisol ha'makom l'man chamishim ha'tzadikim ha'sheh b'kirba. Could it be that you, even if there are 50 tzadikim, you won't spare the city? Chalila lecha me'asod kadavar hazeh. What's chalila lecha? God, right, but Chalila is from the word chulin, right? It's other, it's different, it's profane of you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not you. Me'asot kadavar hazeh la'mit tzadikim rasha ve'ayak tzadik harasha, because if you kill tzadikim and rishayim, then there's no difference. Here's the money line. Chalila lach hashofet kal ha'aretz lo ya'asem mishpat. Avraham Avinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, could it be that the judge of the world will not act justly? So the simple understanding of the pasuk is that Avraham Avinu is calling on some ethic outside of the Torah, outside of halacha, and saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to act justly. And if you killed tzadikim together with rishayim, you're not acting justly, and you have an obligation to live up to a certain standard. That's the simplest reading of those psukim. And that's the reading that Rav Lichtenstein had of them. But the question is, what happens in the Torah? So what's the end of the story? Anybody? Huh? Says who? How do you know?
Could have been five.
Huh?
Could have been five tzaddikim.
You don't know. Huh?
Could have been less than 10.
It could have been. It could have been 50. It could have been 10. There's no answer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yeah, okay, you know. There's no answer. It doesn't matter what the end of the story is. What matters is that what Avraham Avinu thought, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say to Avraham, wrong. I could do what I want. I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At least to me, it sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu buys the argument. HaShofet Kalas Lo Yaseh Mishpat. Okay, I have to do mishpat, and therefore, if there's this number of people, I'll save them. But at a minimum, Avraham Avinu puts forth the argument that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bound by some type of morality. And the simplest reading, although you could argue, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kind of agrees. Now again, you could say he didn't agree, he knew there weren't going to be tzaddikim anyway, so he let Avraham have his fun. But it's also possible that he agreed. Yeah?
The book ends in that argument, it's Moshe, even though it's Medrash, being told to be quiet when he keeps on questioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice to Rabbi Kippur and to the punishment. So on one hand it works with Avraham, but it doesn't work with Moshe.
Right, but I only need it to work in one place for it to be a potential idea. Okay? You're right. There are many other places where it looks like HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do what he wants. And in the end, he is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He can do what he wants. But Avraham, it's pretty significant if Avraham Avinu, the first monotheist in the world, thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to abide by some bigger sense of justice, even if it's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. Okay. To be clear, and here I put the quote down because I didn't want to have to say it on my own. This is what Rav Aaron wrote. Rav Aaron said as follows. We could read number... Well, there's no number for it, but it's where it says, by his light. Okay, he said, I think the Jewish position is absolutely unequivocal. We indeed hold that God's will, his being, is moral and rational, that he does act and will in accordance with certain standards. By virtue of his very essence, certain things not only shall not, but cannot be willed by him. God and moral evil are simply and purely incompatible. Okay? This is, I think, what all of us want to believe. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good, not just because he's omnipotent, but because he really is good. And that frum people are good, because if you follow the Torah and you follow mitzvos, you will become a good person. That's what we want to believe, and not only what we want to believe, it's what Rav Lichtenstein believed, that it has to be that case. Now, everybody here can think of, and if we have time, we'll talk about some of them. Everybody here can think of a halacha that seems to be inconsistent with morality. Okay? Whether it's Amalek, or Ir HaNidachas, or that a mamzer lands up, you know, he did nothing wrong, the mamzer, he or she. And yet, we could all think of them, but the one thing, if we're honest with ourselves, we'll realize that they're a tiny slice of halacha. It's not like out of 613 mitzvos, 300 represent a challenge to our general sense of morality. They don't. There's a handful of them, and they need to be dealt with, and either they can or they can't. But let me say now, to say that I don't understand the mitzvah of Amalek, and therefore the whole Torah is immoral, is simply silly. It's much easier and it's much more appropriate to say, I don't understand the halacha of Amalek, as opposed to saying, since I don't understand Amalek, it must mean that every single thing in the Torah is immoral or unethical. Overwhelmingly, not just when you look at the halachas, but when you look at the societies that we've built, we're incredibly moral and we're incredibly ethical. Yes, there are exceptions that we don't understand. And again, as Henry mentioned before, as society evolves, we have more and more problems and more things that we think was being inconsistent. But overwhelmingly, Rav Lichtenstein's idea was that we want to worship a HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's good and moral and ethical, whatever it means, in his core, and whose Torah reflects that. And I would just say, and I think he thought, that overwhelmingly that was the fact. Even if you could think of exceptions, overwhelmingly that was the fact. And he thought not only was that the fact, but that was the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ki'ilu presented himself in Chumash and in Tanakh. For example, in number 5, right, HaKadosh, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfect in his way, Ki Chal Drachav Mishpat. All of his ways are just, Eil Emunah Ve'ein Avel Tzadik V'yashar Hu. There's nothing wrong with him. He is straight and complete and perfect in all his ways. We believe that. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be seen that way because that's in fact how he is. Okay? Now, assuming that this is true, assuming that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is moral and ethical and we're supposed to see him in that light, just as a quick aside, Jackie mentioned this before, what do we do about Tamei HaMitzvos? So in many ways, the more moral, the more ethical, the more rational HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, then the more it makes sense for us to search for reasons behind mitzvos. Because it makes sense that a moral, ethical, rational God would tell me to eat matzah for moral, ethical, and rational reasons. And if you look in number 6, if you look in the Ramban says, "Es chukosai tishmeru, ve'elu hein behem techalo tabia kilaim." What's a chok? Kilei behema, crossbreeding of animals. And now the Ramban says, he's quoting Rashi first, "Chukim elu gzeirot melech she'ein tam ledavar." Rashi says, it's not clear that Rashi really meant this. There are conflicting Rashis, but certainly Rashi here says that a chok is something which has no explanation. Okay, the Ramban disagrees. Says the Ramban, "Ve'ein hakavana bahem she'tihyeg zeirat melech malchei ha'melachim b'shum makom b'lotam." It doesn't mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to do things for no reason. Ki kolim rat elokat zrufa, because all of God's commandments are purifying. Rak ha'chukim heim gzeirat ha'melech ashe yachok b'malchuto b'li sheyigaleto al tam la'am. What's a chok? A chok has a reason. This is very important, Ramban. Everything has a reason. A chok has a reason, but the chok, the reason for a chok, has not been revealed to us. Ve'ein ha'am nehenim bahem. As a result of which, we don't have any particular joy. You know, when you're in this, where do people shop now that Sims is closed?
Cold.
Okay, so you go to buy a suit, and it's the most beautiful suit ever, and not only the most beautiful suit ever, it's on sale. Okay? And you take it out, and it fits perfectly, doesn't need any tailoring, and then as you get up to the checkout, you happen to notice it says, you know, 75% wool, 25% linen. So, religious people put it back. It's an issur d'orais of shatness. I think what the Ramban would say is, we don't feel that great about it, because we have no idea why we're putting it back. Shatness, you know, wearing wool and linen doesn't seem immoral. It doesn't. So the Ramban says, fine. There are mitzvahs. The Ramban says, there's a reason. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a reason why he doesn't want us to wear wool and linen. We don't know what the reason is. As a result of which, we don't get any great joy in not wearing wool and linen. This is the third to last line in number 6. Ve'ein ha'am nehenin bahem. Aval mehar harin achrehem bilibam. They wonder about it. Umekablim otam liyirat hamalchut. And so we accept the Isser Shatness because we fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu and because we're obedient of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not because it aligns itself with any great sense of morality that we have. We don't look at a society. I never once thought that a colleague at work who wore Shatness was immoral. Not at all. We don't think of it as a value judgment. V'chein, says the Ramban, Chukei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Heim hasodot asher lo batorah. Chukim are the secrets that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has. She'ein ha'am b'machshavtam nehenim bahem k'mishpatim. Which we don't enjoy as much as mishpatim. When I give tzedakah, when I do kibud avaim, not only do I get a mitzvah, but it makes sense to me. I feel good about it. Because it's the kind of thing, if I'm honest with myself, that I would want to do even if I wasn't born Jewish. So it feels good. Chukim are not like that. Aval kulam bitam nachon v'toelet shlema. Nevertheless, they all have a purpose. They all stand for something. They all matter. Now, if we're never going to know what a chok means, what do we get by observing chukim? What do chukim teach us? Obedience. Obedience, which is something that's not so much in vogue now. Right? Doing something that you don't understand, that doesn't make sense to you, simply because HaKadosh Baruch Hu so commanded it. That's a pretty significant step. And the truth is, if I'm honest with myself, as I get older, I start to value chukim much more. And in fact, if you ask me, this I did not hear from Rav Lichtenstein, but if you ask me, chukim on some level are the things that justify mishpatim. Right? How do I know that I'm doing kibud avaim because it's a mitzvah and giving tzedakah, all these other things? Because I do these other things that I don't understand. Yeah.
So if there's a spectrum of chukim don't make you feel good, you don't know why you're doing them, mishpatim you probably would do anyway, right? Then you have the things in the middle, right? Pesach, Shabbos.
Right.
We have reasons for, they make us happy, but we don't think that other people are immoral because they don't keep them, right? Do we, I sort of feel like if you, like those are the best ones because I know why I'm doing them and I know that I'm doing them for God. And all the other ones, like I would sort of have.
Right, I don't want to talk about those only because, right, they're meaningful if you're religious.
Right.
So that those, right, there's a big.
Didn't like your answer.
Okay. This would be a good point time to point out two things. One, the only person who's allowed to go to sleep is my grandson, because he's named after Avaram. Okay. And it wasn't me doing it. Fine. Now, so the discussion of Tamei HaMitzvos may or may not be related to what we started with in terms of the value of under, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu being moral and rational and ethical, and therefore mitzvos being that or not. But all this by way of introduction. Let's say the following, and this was something thought felt strongly, that frumkeit includes goodness, but is not synonymous with goodness. Meaning there's a big overlap between being frum and being good, but they're not synonyms. God forbid they're not antonyms either. They each exist, and maybe in a perfect world we would try to make more and more of a frumkeit into goodness and more goodness into frumkeit. They're synonymous, but they're not identical. Any well-developed frum person should be good, but they're not exactly the same word. Now, let's do them one at a time. How do we relate to what we would call frumkeit devoid of goodness? Does it exist? Does it make sense to say this guy's frum, but he's not good? Does it have any merit? What do we say? Yeah.
That's this past week's haftarah. It's awful. It's like God hates the world.
Okay, I listened to this past week's haftarah. I know what you're talking about. Okay, so everybody in this room wants to say what Yitzi said, which is absolutely, you know, to be frum without being good is a horrific thing. What a Chazal think. So Rav Aaron used to quote this Gemara. Number 7, the Gemara in Kiddushin Mem Amud Aleph. And give it a chance. The Gemara says as follows. Amar Rava, Rav Idi Azbrali. Rav Idi explained the following to me. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu says, Amru Tzadik Ki Tov, Ki Pri Ma'al Aleihem Yochelu. They said about a Tzadik that he was Tov. To notice that he's both a tzaddik and he's a tov, and therefore he'll be able to eat the fruits of his labor. Thank you. V'chiyesh tzaddik tov, v'yesh tzaddik sheino tov. So asks the Gemara, it could be that there's a tzaddik, but he needs to be described as tov. The implication being there might be a tzaddik and he's not tov. Ella, says the Gemara, tov la shamayim v'labrios, a person who's tov la shamai, meaning he has benam la makom, and he's tov la brios, he has benam la chaveiro, then zet tzadik tov. Then he's both a tzadik and he's tov. Tov la shamayim v'ra la brios. But if he's good to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he's not good to people, zeu tzadik she'eino tov. So at this point, Yitzi, this Gemara is against what we all want to say. Okay? There's such a thing as a tzaddik who's not tov. Ki yotzei badavar ata omer. Similar pasuk in the opposite direction. The pasuk says, oy la rasha ra ki gemul yadav ya'aselo. You know, woe is to the rasha who is ra. Es the Gemara v'chiyesh rasha ra v'yesh she'eino ra. Could it be there's such a thing as a rasha and there's such a thing as a ra? Answers the Gemara, yes. Ra la shamayim v'ra la brios. If you're bad to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you're bad to people, who rasha ra? Then you're doubly bad. You're a rasha and you're ra. Ra la shamayim v'eino ra la brios. If you're bad to HaKadosh Baruch Hu but you're good to other people, meaning you have no benom la makom, but you have benom lechaveiro, zehu rasha she'eino ra. Then you're a rasha, but you're not ra. Okay, this is bad for us. It looks like there's such a thing as a tzaddik and a rasha, and the term tzaddik and rasha relates simply to benam lamakom. If you keep Shabbos, if you keep kashrus, if you keep hilchos nida, then you're a tzaddik, even if you're not a good neighbor. And if you're Mechal Shabbos, then you're a Rasha, even if you're a great neighbor. And even if you're an ethical, moral person. That's the simple reading of the Gemara. That's the simple reading of the Gemara. Don't argue yet. I'm on your side. But if we're going to be honest about it, we have to deal with the sources honestly. And Rav Lichtenstein thought the simplest reading of this Gemara was such a thing existed. Don't worry. He didn't like it. Yeah, Judah. Okay, but then what's left of Ra la Brios?
So there's lots of other things that are not positive authority. How rude you are.
Ah, no, but now it makes complete sense and you're helping me out, except you're giving away the game. Because by saying that how rude you are has nothing to do with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of us or the Torah, that's too great a price to pay to explain away a Gemara, I think. Yes? Well, not only a tendency, we have a desire to. Okay. I would like to see...
This implies that tzaddik means something separate from Torah. So how would we...
I'm with you. I'm the one who put this Gemara down on the sheet. So I'm completely with you. I want to say that tzaddik and Tov are the same things, and this Gemara seems to say otherwise. Now, this Gemara... Luckily, we have psukim, including in Yeshayahu, that seem to say the exact opposite. And this is what... Was this week's Haftar?
Yeah.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Here we go. Look at the psukim in Yeshayahu. Says the Navi, Lama li rov ziv chechem yomar Hashem, why do I want your karbanot? Savati olot elim v'chelim rim v'dam parim u'kvasim v'atulim lo chafatzti. I've had enough of these fat animals. I don't desire any of them, even though they're mitzvos. Ki tavo leirot panai, when you come to see me in the Beis Hamikdash, mi bikesh zot mi yedchem remos chatzerai. Who asked you to show up, you tramplers of my home? Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't want to see you in the Beis Hamikdash. Lo tosifu havi min chatshav kitar toivahi li chodesh v'shabbat karam mikra lo uchal avon v'atzara. I don't want your Shabbos, I don't want your Rosh Chodesh, I don't want anything. Chad Shechem Wadechem Sana Anafshi Hayola Latarch Lineti Niso. I can't stand your Yomim Tovim already. This is horrible stuff. And here it gets worse. Tezvav. Ube parischem chapechem. And when you cry out to me, when you outstretch your hands and ask me for help, A'alim Einaimikem. I will turn my face away from you. I won't listen to your tefilos. Ki tarbu tefila eineni shomea. When you daven to me, I don't hear. Yedechem damim maleu, because your hands are full of blood, because you're bad people. Okay, we'll just finish. Rachatzu, then the Navi says, Duchuvu, Rachatzu, Hizaku, purify yourselves. Hasiu ra'am aleichem mineged inai. Chidlu hareya. Stop being bad. What does the Navi want you to do? Limdu heitev. Dirshu mishpat. Chase after justice. Ishru chamos. Shiftu yasom. Rivu almana. Be good to the widows and the orphans.
It's
social.
Huh? This is defined bad because bad is not being other than makom, it's being other than chavero.
Good. That's exactly what we want. So the Navi, forget the Gemara, the Navi seems to say, don't bother showing up if you're frum, but you're not good. Okay? Now it becomes, now we have psukim on our side, there are plenty of psukim on our side, we have a Gemara that's problematic. Okay? But the Navi, and it's in many, many places, the Navi says, you know, stop getting wool tzitzis, right? If you're not a good neighbor, I'm not interested. And again, that's what we want it to be, and we still have this Gemara that we have to deal with. We have the Psukim. We also have a Rambam. And not that a Rambam is more important than Psukim, but here the Rambam Keilu Paskins a certain way. If you look in number 9, the Rambam says, Kama mu'ula ma'alat ha'tshuva. How great is the Madrega of a Baal Tshuva? Why? Emesh hayazem muvdal mehashem Elokei Yisrael. Yesterday, this person was separated from Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Shenema avonotechem hayu mavdilim beinechem levein Elokeichem. Tzoek ve'eino naane. Shenema ki tarbu tfila. He quotes our psukim from Yeshayahu. Ve'osem mitzvot v'torfin otan bifanav. A person does mitzvot. The Rambam says he does mitzvot. And the mitzvahs ki'ilu are stolen from him. Right? He tries to get HaKadosh Baruch Hu to acknowledge how frum he is. And the Rambam says, because he's a bad person, the mitzvahs don't count. Shenemar mi bikei zot mi'etchem ramos chatzerai, mi gam bachem v'yisager delatayim, v'hayom hu mudbak b'shchina. And now that this person has done tshuva, and in this context it means this person has become a good person, has become a better person, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves him. So the Rambam thinks there's a time in which you do mitzvos and they don't count. It's even an exaggeration of what we read in the Psukim, that I would have thought in all respects, okay, if you wear tzitzis, you wear tzitzis. It's still a good thing, even if you're cheating on your taxes at the same time. The Rambam seems to say no. If you're a corrupt person, God doesn't count your mitzvos. It's more even. Is that English? It's even more than what the psukim than what the Navi said in Yeshayahu, or said a different way. The Rambam seems to paskin, to the extent you could say such a thing, that you can't have frumkeit without goodness. It doesn't count. Yes.
How perfect do you need to be in order for your mitzvos to be counted?
What do I really think? I think you have to try. I don't know. I think you have to try. If you ask me.
So then the Gemara makes sense. If you think that you have to try, he's a frum guy and he falls.
Ah, okay. So let's come back to the Gemara. Excellent. Let's come back to the Gemara, because Rav Lichtenstein thought it's a Gemara. We have to take it seriously. And he did not think, this is where I think he's just, it's hard to know, just as an aside, it's hard to know for great people whether the Chiddush comes first. You know, they just see things differently and that fits into their worldview, or their worldview is so ingrained in them that the Gemara just couldn't have meant what it seemed to say. I'll tell you what Rav Aaron does with this Gemara, and everybody on their own could figure out what came first. What he said is as follows. It's not possible that someone who tramples Beinonim L'Chaveiro, but where's Rabbeinu Ta... But where's Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin? Is it tzaddik? Period. He was unwilling to consider the possibility that you're a bad person, but you wear wool tzitzis and you wait till Rabbeinu Tam after Shabbos and you wear Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin and not to knock Rabbeinu Tam, God forbid. Okay? So what do you do with the Gemara? So here was his suggestion. He said the Gemara is referring to somebody who's oblivious of Beinonim L'Chaveiro. You may not love this, but give it a chance. A person who pours all of his energy into Beinonim L'Makom, that's the focus of his life. His life is focused completely on Bein Olam LaMakom. It means he has no social conscience. He's not bad to people. He just doesn't get up in the morning and think how he can be good to people because he's so focused on the Tosefta and Kalim. Right? He loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he loves Talmud Torah. So Rav Aaron said, the Gemara says, that's not ideal. But it's a form of acceptable frumkeit. That's a tzaddik who's not tov. Okay? We know these people. They're so into their Bein Olam LaMakom that Bein Olam LaChaver is simply not a priority for them. It's not, maybe this is what you meant. It's not that they're bad people. It's not that they're bad to their neighbors. Right? They just don't think of how many opportunities do I have to help my neighbor? Presumably, if they saw their neighbor and Rav Lichtenstein said, for example, there's lo tucha lehitaleim is a lav if you see your neighbor's lost object. So he says, so then you can't say a person's oblivious to it. He has to do that. There are a bunch of things that we have to do. There's a minimum of Bein Olam LaChavero. But he thought what the Gemara meant was, if you're the kind of person for whom Bein Olam LaChavero is not a priority, you're not a bad person, it's just not a priority, then you're a tzaddik, but you're not tov. But if you cross a certain line, if you just don't help anybody ever, and people ask you for tzedakah, you don't help, he said, you know, he didn't know where the line was. But it helps me to understand at least that the Gemara says, you could be one of these people, and I have to say, I can think of people like this. They're not bad people. They're just so focused on, you know, when Shkia is and when Seis is and exactly the minutia of Halacha that there's no room for focusing on other people. Not because they're selfish, just because, you know, and for example, everybody knows if it turns out, I don't think this is true, that Albert Einstein, these people, you know, geniuses, some math genius. So you go, okay, his contribution to the world is some math formula that I'll never understand and he sits in a lab all day and it's true. He doesn't get involved in politics, and he doesn't get involved in the shul, and he doesn't help his neighbors. We cut that guy slack. So I think Rav Aaron says that guy, in religious terms, is a tzaddik, but not tov. Yeah?
I mean, I accept that because it looks like to me, the Gemara, you're saying these people are not performing any averos.
Okay.
Whereas Yeshaya is talking about people who are performing averos, essentially, but at the same time, they're bringing korbanos.
It's a fair point. You don't know, in the Gemara, you don't know what they're doing wrong. You have to fill in the blanks. This Gemara doesn't say. So I think this is a fair way to fill in the blank. You're right. Yeshayo says, the guy passes, a guy every day is asking him for tzedakah, and he never gives him money. And Yeshayo says, stop showing up to the Beis HaMikdash if you can't be bothered to give tzedakah to your neighbor. Rav Aaron thought that those were the parameters in which we have to try to understand the Gemara. Okay, that's frumkeit without goodness. What about the reverse? What about goodness without frumkeit? Does that exist? So, you could argue, and look, as society develops, maybe we're moving in that direction, I don't know, that Rav Aaron quoted from Ivan Karamazov in Dostoevsky's novel, who said, you know, without God, everything is moral. He thought, you know, if you had no anchor to your morality, then you just make it up as you go along. And I actually think that there may be, if you look in number 10, there may be a source for this. When Avraham goes and tells Avimelech that Sarah is his sister, not his wife. Okay, Vayomer, look at number 10. Vayomer Avraham el Sarah, Ishto Achotihi. Vayishlach Avimelech Melech Geror Vayikach et Sarah. Vayavo Elohim el Avimelech Bachalom Alayla Vayom Elohim Chameit al Haisha Shelakachta Vehi Beulat Baal. HaKadosh Baruch comes to Avimelech, he says, you're going to die because this woman you took is married. Vayavimelech lo kara veila Vayomer Adonai Hagoy Gam Tzadik Taharog. First of all, just now's not the time, but it's the exact same words that Avraham Avinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu about stone. Right? You're going to lahamit tzadikim rasha vayatzitcha tzadik ha-rasha. And here Avimelech says, ha-goy gad tzadik ta-rog. Vayom Avimelech al Avraham. Then he goes to complain to Avraham. Ma ra'ita ki asita ta-davar hazeh. Vayomer Avraham ki amarti Rak ein yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh v'haraguni al dvar ishti. Rabbi Elbanun points out that they lived in a civilized society. They had rules. To some extent, Avraham Avinu is saying, I know you're a civilized society, but when the king wants a woman, he finds some kind of justification, even within your code of morality, for taking him. And Avraham Avinu on some level says, there is no goodness without morality. It's funny, it's the exact opposite of what I claimed Avraham was saying before, and I'm less sure about this, but it certainly sounds that way. And certainly in our own experience, we know people, well, I know people, but I'll say this. I think we all know people who we think of as being incredibly ethical and good, and they don't believe in God. The question is whether that's sustainable. But I would take the position that I know people in my life who are way better than I'll ever be and don't care about mitzvahs whatsoever. Okay? But the question is whether goodness is sustainable without a core, or we'll just keep moving society, we'll keep changing our definition of society without, you know, there was a time where society thought that abortion was bad, that abortion was immoral. Okay, it's done under certain circumstances. You know, it's moved to the point now where that's not what society thinks. There's a whole range of issues on which it looks like you could keep reinterpreting. What I'll tell you is, to be good, we all know people who are good people and who are not religious. The question is whether people who are good first are also religious. Right? You meet all these people who care about all these causes, and their whole life's goal is tikkun olam. But tikkun olam is their exact idea of goodness. It happens to be that they get up every day and do exactly what they would have done whether they believed in God or not. And lucky for them, God actually wants them to do that which they would have done anyway. They may be good, but they're certainly not religious under those circumstances. Okay, now.
Set a standard in that generation that, you know, maybe in a different generation they won't look at it the same way, but at that point in time it's good in every level and religious. But
I don't think that has to be. You want it to be. Maybe it's just religious.
But no,
who says that it's good?
It's good and religious. Later on you can define it differently.
Maybe. I don't know. Let's come to the most difficult part, and that's when there's a conflict between religion and morality. Or at least the way I'm afraid to even say it that way, but Rav Lichtenstein said it that way. Yeah, what do you do when there's a conflict? And obviously, the most famous example is the Akedah. Again, we look at Avraham Avinu as being both religious and moral and ethical, and the Psukim say as follows. It's the bottom of 10. Vayomer, so the Malach cries out, Vayomer, Al tishlach yadcha lanar, v'al tas lo ma'uma. Avraham puts Yitzhak, well, let's start as follows. Obviously, child sacrifice is in the top three of immoral things you could do in the world. And I don't know what the other two are, but it's pretty bad. And for a person like Avraham Avinu, who was the paragon of morality, who stood up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows up to him one day and says, basically as I understand it, please do the most immoral thing you could possibly think of. And Avraham Avinu says, okay. And he's about to kill him, and the Malach cries out, "Vayomer al tishlach yadcha lanar, v'al ta'as lo mu'uma." Don't touch him. Ki ata yadati ki yirei Elokim ata. Now I know that you have yiras shamayim, v'lo chasachta et bincha et yichidcha mimeni. And you didn't withhold your most precious, your most beloved, your only son. Now, the question is as follows: HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu that he's going to destroy Sodom. Sodom is full of evil people. Maybe it has some good people in it, but overwhelmingly they're evil. And Avraham Avinu goes to battle with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and speaks to him, you know, in back and forth of 20 psukim in a borderline disrespectful way, concluding with HaShofet kal haaretz lo yaaseh mishpat. Okay? Now, one day, a little later, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Avraham and says, do this immoral thing. And Avraham Avinu says, Okay, no problem. What's going on? So the Medrash asked this question. The Medrash says in number 11, Amar Avacha, Hitchil Avraham Tumiyah. Avraham, at the end of the story, says, I don't know what's going on. Ein hadvarim halalu ela dvarim shel tema. These things are just some great wonder. Why? Etmol amarta ki bi Yitzchak yikare lechazara. Yesterday you tell me that Yitzchak will be the progenitor of a whole nation. Chazarta v'amarta kachna et bincha. Then you told me, kill him. Va'achshav at omer li, al tishlach yadcha alanar etma. What's going on? Now, here's the thing as far as I could figure it out. The Medrash makes clear, well, the Psukim make clear that it's a three-day journey from the time Avraham Avinu is told to sacrifice his son till he gets to Har HaMoriah. It's a three-day journey. And the Medrash tells the story of Avraham wondering and wandering and not sure and he can't understand. Avraham Avinu knew that what he was asked to do was immoral. And he had a long time to think about it. And yet, there's no psukim, and I don't even think, it's hard to say, I'm not aware of any medrashim in which Avraham Avinu challenges HaKadosh Baruch Hu till it's over. When it's over, after the Malach says, Al tishlach yadcha lanar, then Avram says, could somebody please tell me what's going on here?
But he's not challenging the morality of the Israelites.
No, he's not. And here's what I think the answer is, and I think that I heard this from Rabbi Lichtenstein. The answer is as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham he's going to destroy Sodom. And by doing so, basically invites Avraham to discuss it with him. But with respect to Yitzchak, it's a direct command. And when it's a direct command, morality is suspended in favor of a direct tzivui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When there's a conflict, if it stands for anything, it stands for the following. When there's a direct conflict between the Tzivui Hashem and our sense of morality, the Tzivui Hashem wins. That's what it stands for. And it's seen even more clearly. If you look at number 12, this is a famous Gemara. This gets back to the case of Amalek. Bisha'a she'amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Shaul, lech v'hikita at Amalek. At the time that God told Shaul, go wipe out Amalek, Amar. Shaul did what we would all want to do. He said as follows, the Gemara says, Uma nefesh achat amra Torah, have eglo arufa. For one unknown person who was killed, we have to bring an eglo arufa. Kala nefashot halalo alachat kama v'kama. Certainly to wipe out, or say, to exterminate a whole people, how much worse could that be? Not only that, v'imadam chata, behema machata. Why kill the animals? V'im gidolim chatu, kitanim machatu. Okay, the grown-ups sinned. What about the children? What did they do wrong? Sounds like a good question. Yatsa abat kol v'amralo, my favorite pasuk in Kohelet, al tehi tzadik harbe. Don't be such a big tzadik. What does the Gemara mean? I think what the Gemara means is we want to do our best. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is moral. We believe that he's ethical. We believe that he's good. We really do. And we want to do our best to align Torah and mitzvahs with those concepts of morality. And overwhelmingly, they do align, except when they don't. And when they don't, in a conflict between morality and a tzivui Hashem, for frum people, the tzivui Hashem wins. In a direct command. So you'll ask yourself, I once talked about this in yeshiva, somebody said to me, what would you do if HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to you and said, kill your son? The answer is, I'd be so sure it wasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, the other side of this is like, how frum did Avraham Avinu have to be to not pretend it wasn't just a voice? Right? It couldn't happen to me. I don't know who it could happen to. But the bottom line is, both things exist. We have a sense of morality, and we have a sense of frumkeit, and we want them to be the same thing. And they are the same thing, except when they're not. And that's complicated, and at some level it's inconsistent, but that's how Rav Aaron thought. And that's how he described this situation. He told a story. After the Sabra and Shatila massacre, that's the first Lebanon war, it's 30-something years ago. So he wrote an open letter to the prime minister. And in the open letter, Begin was the prime minister, he made the point that why was Shaul punished for not killing Agag Melech Amalek? He said, because if you view, he said, exterminating a people, you know, we think of as being immoral. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do something immoral and you do it, okay, you did the Tzivui Hashem. There's no doubts, there's no questions. But the second you don't do it completely, the second you leave one guy alive, and in this case, you know, the king, then basically you're saying, I didn't do it because it was the Tzivui Hashem. I did it because I wanted to do it. And then it becomes immoral. So here's the interesting part of the story. So Rav Aaron said that he heard after he wrote this that a prominent Zionist rabbi, Talmud Chacham, who he respected, spent a half an hour in his yeshiva ripping into Rav Lichtenstein for writing this idea, for claiming that killing Amalek may have been immoral. And so Rav Aaron, being Rav Aaron, called the person up. He never said who it was, so I don't know who it is. He called the person up and he said, I heard that you didn't like my letter. So this Rosh Shiva said, yeah, because you called killing Amalek immoral. So Rav Lichtenstein said, but you know, don't you think that it's not the kind of thing we would do on our own? So he said, yes. But to call it immoral raises significant educational issues. For guys in your yeshiva, to call anything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us to do immoral, you know, will sow doubts in their mind about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rav Aaron said, because he was great, I thought he had a point. He did it anyway, and I think he told the story over because he disagreed, but he understood there was a risk involved. But he didn't see how you could describe killing Amalek as, you know, maybe I'm missing the word, but it's certainly not moral, right? Killing women and children, it's hard to describe that as moral. But the bottom line is that he thought that both things had to coexist. And I'll go a step further. You know, he used to quote the Pasuk in Tehillim all the time. Achat diber Elokim, shtayim zu shamati. God said one thing, I heard two things. Following the direct Tzivui Hashem, even when it's in conflict with our sense of morality, is exactly like, maybe not exactly like, but it's very similar to doing chukim. Meaning, keeping a religion that's exactly like what you would do anyway. Is whatever it is, it's not a religion. To be able to do something that A, you don't understand, or worse, you wouldn't do, and not only wouldn't you do it, you think it's wrong to do. The ability to suspend your own judgment and to say, I wouldn't do this on my own, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to do it, I will do it. I don't think it makes you less good. I think it makes you more frum. And we could be both. Rav Lichtenstein thought we could be both. We could be as good a person as any one of us could be, and as frum a person. And sometimes those things are in conflict. And he said, when they're in conflict, and this is something I want to talk about on Thursday night in terms of centrist orthodoxy, he said, when they're in conflict, never think I'm being less good. Always think I'm being more frum. And that's the way to settle the issue. You want to do both as much as you can. Sometimes they're in conflict. And when they are, say to yourself, it's not that I'm being less moral. It's not that I'm being less ethical. It's that I'm being more religious. I'm being more of an Eved Hashem. And, you know, we hope it'll work out. That's it for tonight.
Really, that's a very dangerous idea.